Smith
back to throw. Has time. Over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field.
He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right. Needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 97 yards.
Now, here's your host, John Schmelt.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Also on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. And talking New York football Giants, the OTAs start tomorrow. And one of the guys that will be here to cover it is Ralph Vacchiano from the New York Daily News. Ralph, good morning. We finally get to see something that resembles an actual practice.
Let's hope so. Something other than guys in shorts just kind of standing around looking lost like they did at rookie camp. Some things to evaluate for once.
Yeah, no question. And let's start with the Giants' newest signing. That's Aaron Curry. A lot of fans are excited. I've tried to temper the expectations a little bit. What's your take on the Aaron Curry signing?
Well, I mean, I don't know why people are would be excited about that. I think it's a good low-risk signing. Yeah. You know, this is a guy who, let's face it, he was a bust as the fourth overall pick in the draft and never lived up to his potential. And, you know, now he's also coming in overweight. He's, you know, admittedly, and Tom Coughlin admitted that he's got about 10 pounds to lose. The Giants are just taking a low-budget chance that by training camp, by the start of the season, he'll be in shape, and maybe he can recapture some of that talent that everybody knew that he had. So, you know, I don't expect anything out of him early. I look at this a lot like the Keith Rivers trade from a year ago, that, you know, it's a no-brainer to give it a try. There's some talent there, and, you know, let's see. Keith Rivers didn't give much to the Giants last year, gave a little bit. You know, maybe Aaron Curry can give a little bit more.
And the funny thing about it is that Rivers is probably the guy Curry is going to be competing with to play that spot. Theoretically, that's going to be vacated by Mathias Kiwanuka, who's going to spend most of his time at defensive end.
Exactly. And you know, it's a good move by Jerry Reese, and I like the way the Giants do business in this respect, that, you know, when you only have a certain amount in your budget, and they're obviously up against the salary cap because they've got so many talented players on the roster, you know, you try to make the most of it. And if you've got, you know, $1 million to spend, what's better, taking an unproven guy who at this point, if he's still on the market, you know, probably doesn't have nearly the talent that a Keith Rivers or an Aaron Curry does? Or do you take two guys who your scouts once saw unbelievable potential in and let them battle it out? Maybe, just maybe, they recapture some of that glory. And now, instead of one chance, you got two. You know, two guys who are at the top of a draft and once at the top of their profession, trying to see what they can do.
Now, there were some reports last week through various outlets that the negotiations with Victor Cruz are quote-unquote on the two-yard line. Well, apparently the Giants' red zone troubles are back because we still don't really have any word on that. Do you have any new news on the Victor Cruz front, Ralph?
No, everything, despite the hysteria, despite the reports, everything is relatively where it's been for a while. And that's not to say that there haven't been talks or there hasn't been movement. You know, they're probably closer than they were, but this is all relative, and it's, you know, from a sort of an inside perspective, it's almost nonsense, and I admit that, I report it, but we're reporting nonsense because, you know, things are not close until they're done. And the example I always give is, if you and I are negotiating and you want $11 and I want to give you $10, everybody's going to say, wow, you're really close. But if neither one of us ever budge, we could be stuck at that spot for forever. So, you know, who knows? Right now, they haven't agreed on money. They're getting closer. They've been close. But, you know, at some point, somebody's going to have to blink. And my guess is it will come before the veteran minicamp in June. I don't think it's going to come before that. That's the point where, you know, I think it sort of turns a little on Victor if he's not here, because we'll start to call it an actual holdout, and, you know, there'll be a little bit of a hit to his reputation.
Well, and there's also going to be a hit to his wallet. And for a guy like Victor, I know he has all the endorsements, obviously, but he hasn't made a ton of money in his NFL career. So fines would actually probably hurt him more than they would, say, a guy like, you know, Osiu Mainyara, who had skipped these workouts in the past, or even a guy like Jeremy Shockey, who at times didn't show up for the minicamps.
Right, and the more important thing, I think, is that where it would really hurt him is there's a June 19th deadline, which is really the point of no return for him, because at that point the Giants have the option under the collective bargaining agreement to reduce his tender offer, which is $2.8 million, all the way down to $630,000. And that's, I mean, you're talking a hit of more than $2 million for a guy who's made, I think I added it up once, it was like barely $1 million in his first three NFL seasons. You know, that's something, that's a hit I don't think he wants to take, because he's not going to hold that into the season. I don't think he's crazy enough to do that. So, you know, he's not going to, I think the Giants would reduce the tender in a heartbeat on him just to, you know, sort of force his hand. So it makes more sense that by June 19th, he'll at the very least have signed his tender so he can show up. And, hey, he could keep negotiating and sign that long-term deal tomorrow. So, you know, he may as well sign the tender, come play, keep negotiating on the long-term deal, and buy yourself a little bit of time.
Ralph, what's the thing holding up the long-term deal? Is it total money? Is it guaranteed money? Is it length? What's the biggest stumbling block right now?
You know, I don't really know, to be perfectly honest. Victor hasn't said anything about it. You know, I've heard varying things from different people on different sides, but, you know, the people in the room are Tom Condon, the agent, and, you know, I believe Jerry Reese has been the one talking to him, but obviously John Mara, Steve Tisch have been kept updated on it. I don't know that it's one single issue. You know, I've heard that the Giants have an offer on the table that is worth nearly $8 million a year. I believe that that's something that Victor Cruz would eventually accept. But then it becomes, you know, you got to structure it, and what's the bonus? And it's probably a little bit of everything. I think if it were just one thing, like he needed a couple of extra $1 million in a bonus, then, you know, you'd really start to see reports say it's almost done, we're getting there. You know, but I think it's probably a little more complicated than that. These big deals, you know, you're looking 5-6 years on this deal. They're always a little bit more complicated than it sounds like when we put them in the papers.
Ralph, what are you keeping an eye on when OTAs start tomorrow for the Giants? Any particular position group that you're really interested to see how these guys start to show up on the field?
Well, you mentioned the linebackers, and that's a particular issue for me. I look at this core, and I don't have any idea what the Giants are doing. I really don't. I know they devalue the linebacker a little bit. It's not the most important position in their defense, especially if they're playing nickel and dime defenses. But, you know, you have lost all three starters from last year, which, you know, with Kiwi Newcomb back to defensive end, and that's fine because it was a bad unit last year. But the replacements, to me, I don't know what they are. I mean, Dan Connor is, you know, sort of a middling free agent. You know, Jaquan Williams, everybody tells me how much potential he has, but we haven't really seen it on the field. And then there's the Keith Rivers-Aaron Curry battle that you have no idea what you're going to get out of. So I want to start to see, you know, what these guys bring, who's ready, who can make some plays. And probably the other thing I want to look at is the offensive line. You know, I don't know who's going to participate in OTAs. Chris Snee's coming off surgery. David Boss is coming off surgery. You know, I want to see, you know, who's healthy, who's ready to go, and I want to see, you know, what that alignment looks like. Are Justin Pugh, James Brewer, and David Deal all sitting at tackle for sort of a battle royale for the right spot, or is somebody going to slide into guard and maybe give Kevin Booth a little bit of a push? You know, those kind of things is what I think of what I'm going to be looking at.
Interesting, and I think it'll be interesting to see too how they set up the depth chart. I think a defensive tackle, there are so many guys, and in a lot of ways they're specialized. Some guys are run stuffers, some guys like Colin Jenkins, smaller guys, more pass rusher types. I'll be curious to see how they kind of line up that position and try to figure out how they're going to use so many guys at that spot.
Yeah, and you know what? That's another position where I don't, it's different than the linebackers, but I can also say I don't really know what they're doing there. They're just adding guys, and it sounds like to me that they're not sure of anybody they have there other than perhaps, you know, Linval Joseph, who's an incumbent, and Colin Jenkins, who is a fairly decent money free agent. Other than that, they just keep adding bodies in there, and they're going to let it go to see, you know, who could possibly step up and, you know, win some backup jobs. And I wonder a little bit about guys like, you know, Sean Rogers. He was their first signing, but maybe, you know, all these other signings are a sign that, I don't know, maybe he's not healthy or maybe he's not ready to go or in shape. What does all this mean for Marvin Austin? I mean, you know, we put him in the background because he's a second-round pick and we knew he's a project when they drafted him. But at some point, he's got to produce, and this would be the year. Otherwise, we're going to be looking at that as one of the worst second-round picks the Giants have ever had. So there's a lot of competition there, a lot of bodies, and, yeah, I agree. The depth chart in OTAs won't tell us everything, but it's kind of give us a good idea of what they're going to be looking at come training camp.
And I think we're also going to see perhaps how much exactly the Giants are going to want to use that three safety package again. Are we going to see that formation a lot in OTAs? And if we do, who's going to be the safety near the line of scrimmage? Is it going to be Ontrell Roll again? Are they going to try to, you know, mix the rookie in there, Cooper Taylor, a little bit? Where are they going to have Stevie Brown? Is Will Hill going to be the guy in the slot? I think you will see a lot from that formation as well to see if Perry Fuel is going to make any adjustments with those three safeties.
Yep, I agree. That'll be interesting, too. You know, I'm not completely sold on their cornerback situation, so my guess would be they will use three safeties far more than they would use three cornerbacks. You know, they may be tinkering. You know, sometimes you see something in an OTA, even training camp, and you think, oh, this is what they're going to use. And I remember the hysteria over the NASCAR package a few years ago, and then they barely used it during that regular season. I think we'll certainly be looking at that and kind of getting an idea of, you know, what works, what Perry Fuel is, you know, at least going to want to try out over the summer.
What's going to happen to running back, Ralph? I like the talent there. I think you do as well. I think Andre Brown's shown he can be a short yardage guy. We know about David Wilson's explosive ability. But neither one of these guys have proven, not David Wilson's fault, he hasn't been given the chance yet, that they can survive a 16-game NFL regular season. Are the Giants at some point going to invest, in addition to Ryan Terrain, some veteran depth at that position to give them a little protection? And could that player be Ahmad Bradshaw?
I think they will at some point. At the very least, they're going to have a short list ready to go of veteran guys. Could it be Ahmad Bradshaw? Possibly. I've heard varying reports on whether he's healthy or not, though.
Yeah.
I think, you know, this is a 26-year-old guy with a couple of thousand-yard seasons. If he was ready to play, somebody would sign him. And if it wasn't the Giants at the minimum salary, somebody else would have picked him up by now. There's plenty of running back needy teams. So I think that, you know, the Giants probably have their eyes on him. I know they're still involved with Tim Hightower. I believe there was a report in the Washington Post that said they were planning on bringing him back in a couple of weeks. Whether that coincides with the veteran minicamp, I don't know. They do have an open roster spot, so that's certainly a possibility. I think they do want veteran depth on the team, and mostly because of exactly what you said, there's unproven health for both of those guys, whether they can withstand the pounding. And it's going to be, I don't mean this to sound dire at all, but it's going to be a bit of an experiment this season, I think, at running back. I think ideally the Giants would like David Wilson to take the ball and be the main guy and flash that explosiveness and take the pounding. But, you know, whether they use him more or Andre Brown more is just going to depend on who's feeling it, who's producing, and who holds on to the football. And that's something we won't really know until the games start.
And, you know, something, a comparison I like to make here, and I made a couple times on the show, you know, David Wilson, you don't want to fall into the same trap the Cowboys fell into with Felix Jones, who looked like that great change of pace, super explosive runner when he was the number two guy to Marion Barber. When Felix Jones was asked to be that number one running back and he had to take that pounding and he gained a little weight to take that pounding because he had to carry it 20 times a game, then all of a sudden that explosiveness faded away a little bit and you don't want to run into that same situation with David Wilson.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to take a few years probably until he's a guy that everybody's comfortable with as a 20-carry-a-game type of guy. That's a big reason why they're going to have to have a veteran guy, why Andre Brown is back, why they spent $2 million on him in the tender to him, even though he's had a lot of health issues. They know they need to have a split backfield. I think they know not to rush David Wilson. If he's carrying 20, 25 times a game, they're going to be in a bit of a jam, I think. And I think they did the same with Ahmad Bradshaw. He was a smaller guy at first. He needed to prove he could handle the pounding, and he sort of worked his way up to being the main guy. He was always behind somebody else, and ideally I think that's what they'll do with David Wilson. But, again, if Andre Brown gets hurt, they might not have a choice. He may have to suddenly step up and be the guy.
Also, of course, what they did with Tiki Barber in the 90s, kind of easing him into that full-time role, and then he really took it and ran with it, obviously. What was your take on the rookies, Ralph, from rookie minicamp? Anybody jump out to you? The one basic broad point that I seem to come out with is that all three, really four, of the Giants' top picks, Ryan Nassib put aside, they really need to hit the weight room a little bit. They look like collegians. They don't necessarily have the size and strength of what I would consider a pro to be, especially up front.
I would agree. They didn't. That eyeball test was that they all looked a little bit small in the arms, small in the body. I think they needed to get a little bigger and a little stronger as well. The good news, and I probably said this to you before, I think this draft for the Giants was very much about 2014 and beyond. I don't know that any of the players that they drafted, it figures in prominently this season. Maybe Justin Pugh, if he gets a little bigger and stronger, can fight for a starting job. But you don't really use reserve linemen very much. Mostly they stand on the sidelines. So maybe Cooper Taylor gets involved in the three safety rotation. Maybe Jonathan Hankins picks up a few plays here or there, or DeMontre Moore, but you're talking, you know, probably 15, 16, 20 plays in a game. You know, these are about guys who are going to be future mainstays of the lineup. So, yeah, they do need to get a little bit bigger and stronger. It was hard to tell much else. I mean, you saw the rookie minicamp, a lot of standing around. Mostly they're going against players who are not ever going to see a snap in the NFL. So, you know, usually the guys that jump out of those camps are skill position players, and since the Giants didn't draft many of those, it was hard to know much.
I'm going to give you three guys that, in my opinion, are make-or-break years.
Okay.
Tell me which, if any, will make it. Jarrell Jernigan, Marvin Austin, James Brewer.
Oh, I think the favorite to make it out of those three would be James Brewer, because I think he's going to have the best opportunity. You know, David Deal obviously is in his final year with the Giants. It's also possible that Kevin Booth is in his final year with the Giants. You know, they've got a line with four players over 30, so there could be a lot of openings for him in the future if he can show them that he can play, whether it's in preseason or in a regular season opportunity. And I think they like him. I think they've always liked him in his size. Jarrell Jernigan probably has the next best chance. He better take advantage of whatever opportunity he gets. Otherwise, he's going to go the way of, you know, Sonoris Moss, Travis Beckham, you know, those type of weapons that never quite panned out. Whether he gets an opportunity is going to be hard to tell, though, because right now, you know, as much as Kevin Gilbride has been talking him up as a guy who better step up, if you've got a healthy Hakeem Nicks, a healthy Victor Cruz, a healthy Reuben Randall, you know, some running backs, a tight end, there's not a lot of balls that are going to go Jarrell Jernigan's way, so he better have a big preseason to prove that he can get a couple of catches a game. And who's your third guy? I'm sorry.
Marvin Austin.
Yeah, Marvin Austin. I mean, you talked about him earlier. Where in that defensive tackle rotation is he going to fit? I mean, there seems to be 100 defensive tackles in front of him. He's barely played in his years with the Giants. He better be coming to camp bigger than he's ever been, stronger than he's ever been, faster than he's ever been, and that's just to get his opportunity. Otherwise, he's going to spend a lot of time sitting this summer.
Ralph, final question. I'm not going to have you tell me whether or not you think the Giants will do it, but how many wins will it take to win the NFC East in 2013?
You know, I saw a projection by somebody this morning, maybe it was an odds maker, that had the projection at 9 to win the NFC
East. Wow, that's low.
Yeah, I mean, ten would not surprise me. I think that,
I agree with you.
Yeah, the Eagles are going to be improved. You know, I don't know quite what to make of the Cowboys, but the Redskins obviously were good last year. I think the Giants, you know, were a play or two away from being an 11-win team last year. So you're looking at a division that is very tightly packed, will basically beat up on each other. If anybody, you know, wins two-thirds of their division games, they will win the division, probably going away. But, yeah, I would say if you get to 10 wins, yeah, you're going to walk away with the NFC East, and 9 might do it. You know, it might take some tiebreakers, but you're looking at four teams that are probably going to be between 10 and 6 and 7 and 9.
Ralph, great stuff as always. We'll see you tomorrow. We look forward to it, and maybe we'll get some Victor Cruzes over the next couple of weeks. Thanks, man.
Thanks, John. Take care.
Hey, great. That's great. Ralph Vacchiano from the Daily News does an excellent job covering the Giants for them. We thank him for joining us. Does an excellent job. We'll see him here tomorrow at the Timex Performance Center. And of course, you can follow Ralph on Twitter as well. So make sure you check that out. Well, we got a couple of people that have held through that interview. We'll get to them on the phones right now at 201-939-4513. You can call in and you can chime in if you like. Everything we talked about with Ralph as we get ready for OTAs tomorrow. Let's start with Brett in Pennsylvania. Brett, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are yourself?
Hey, I'm doing well, Brett. Thanks for holding. What's going on?
I just got a question about our secondary. I mean, that's what seems to be killing us lately.
Sure.
They're always getting hurt and mixed around. I just wonder why we didn't, like Aaron Curry, they said a low risk, high reward.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we take a stab at, like, Austin Wall for a short year deal or, you know?
Well, I mean, Austin Wall's already been signed up, so he's not on the
free
market.
Well, yeah, I'm talking about when he was open, why didn't we take a stab, you know?
Well, you know what? He wouldn't have. I don't think he would have signed for as little as they, you know, for example, got Terrell Thomas at basically what was the veterans minimum. He didn't sign for as little as a guy like Aaron Curry signed for, which was the veterans minimum. So I don't think Asamoah is as low of risk as you would say, only because you would have to invest more money in him. You know what I mean?
I mean, what was his contract that he signed with the Niners? It wasn't that much. It was $2 million?
Well, I mean,
somewhere around $2 million.
$2 million is something the Giants, frankly, don't have under the salary cap. That's the million right now that's dedicated to Victor Cruz's $2.9 million tender. So unless you want to find $2 million to cut elsewhere, which, you know, would be Kevin Booth, the starting offensive lineman, or somebody else, or Brandon Myers, your starting tight end this year, someone you brought in at the veterans minimum. I mean, $2 million isn't as easy to find as you might think.
All right. I don't know much of management for it.
No, that's but, okay, right?
But Ralph just said about not sold on his corners, you know. We're going three safeties. There's Charles Woodson out there. You think, what about him with a minimum deal?
Well, unfortunately, from what I'm reading, Charles Woodson apparently still wants more than the minimum. Now, if Charles Woodson's a minimum deal, I think he's a good fit here based on how the Giants use their safeties. I think it would be a good low-risk, high-reward type of signing. That being
said, I heard they're in the mix.
I'm not sure how close they are. I'm not sure if they're talking to him. Look, the Giants keep all their options open. I've heard the Broncos and the Raiders are the two favorites based off reports. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't have those types of sources out there in the AFC West. But I do think the Giants, what they're trying to do this year is win, obviously. But also, Brett, I think what they're trying to do is to get younger. I think they're tired of having these older players that are always missing practice. And look, as good as Charles Woodson is, dude's always hurt. Something's always hurting, whether it's his shoulder or his ankle or his knee or whatever. And I think they're tired of having these guys in and out of the lineup. They're trying to get younger and they're trying to get healthier.
I understand that, but right now, Eli's in his prime. You know, maybe a couple older guys here and there just to fill spots of injuries in the secondary that we've been having. Maybe, you know, it might help.
Hey, to me, if you could get Charles Woodson at the veterans minimum,
I love it.
I think it would be an excellent signing. I'm just not sure that's going to happen.
Well, and Jerry Reese, I trust. I mean, he's been doing great, so he knows what he's doing.
Appreciate the call, man.
Yeah. All right, thank you.
Thanks, Brett. Thanks for holding. Appreciate it. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Shakes down in Baltimore. Shakes, what's going on, pal?
Hey, what's going on, John?
What's up, dude?
The last caller. I think we need that veteran presence. I've been telling you that from before the draft. Like, Charles Woodson will fit right in.
Well, they have plenty of veterans out there, Shakes. I'm just not sure they have veterans that are still of, you know, high quality. You know what I mean?
Of Woodson type. Like, no, it's not in the secondary. Like, so yeah, with healthy, like, he's one of the top DBs in the league. I can't even call him a corner or a safety, but a DB in the league. Like, he's top. Like, you don't get too much better than him. So I'm really hoping for him to just get his mind right and be like, look, I just want to win a Super Bowl. I go to veteran minimum, go play for the Giants. I win it. Play in New York, you know, everything. Like, that's how we need to do it.
Just be careful. Charles Woodson's not the same player he was 4 or 5 years ago playing for the Packers either. He's not quite as good as he once was.
He's not, but he's still very good. Like, when I seen him in that playoff game last year, I was like, oh, my God. that impressed me, man. The position battles, like, I agree with the interview guy from Daily News. What was his name?
Ralph Vacchiano.
Ralph? Yeah, I agree with him about the linebackers, of course, that I'm watching. And I want to also know, like, who's going to take over that right tackle spot. Like,
on offense, you're talking about?
The right tackle spot, I don't know whether Pugh, Brewer, or Dio is going, you know, solidify that spot. And I like Dio because, you know, loyalty, and he's been there forever for us, and he done everything. Like, you plug him anywhere, he's like, okay, I'll do it, you know. And I like that. Like, he sacrificed everything for his, you know, for the Giants, and we paid him back nicely. But I wanted to ask you, I wanted to do a little trivia question.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
All right, what do you got?
I wanted to see if you know this this answer.
All right.
The last four decades, there's only one team that won a Super Bowl in these last four decades. Who is that?
Only one team has won a Super Bowl in the... Okay, so the 70s don't count, is what you're telling
no.
me. Oh, so then it's the Giants. That's an easy one. Come on, Chicks.
Very easy, huh? Yeah. So all these NFC East fans, bow down. We are top of the line team. And the Dallas, like, I don't like how they still claim themselves as America's team. Like, if it's anything, it should be either us or the Packers or the Patriots are America's team. Cowboys haven't done nothing since, what, 95? They haven't won a Super Bowl?
Well, being America's team isn't necessarily how many times you've won. It's a matter of how large and varied your fan base is. And it's really hard to argue that there's another team, you know, around the country that has more fans than the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, just for example, just look at how many followers they have on Twitter. Look at how many fans they have on Facebook. I mean, they literally blow most other NFL teams out of the water.
I don't understand it. I don't understand. they haven't been relevant for almost 20 years.
It's been a while since the Cowboys have won a playoff game, to be quite honest. I think 97. So it's been a while.
Yes, a long, long, long time.
Well, I take that back. Tony Romo did win a playoff game 3 years ago, I believe. So I take that one back. But it has been a while since they've been real contenders.
Philly.
Yes, correct.
But, yeah, but whoop-de-doo, one playoff game in over 20 years.
Very true, Shakes. I appreciate the call, my friend.
All right, man.
Be good. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, and one more thing. Like, Coughlin is not going nowhere, but I do agree with the caller yesterday that Coward will be our next coach, and I hope and I pray for that. So, yeah, go Big Blue, and thanks for taking my call.
Hey, appreciate it, Shakes. No problem.
All right.
I think if they do move on, eventually, when they move on from Coach Coughlin, he's not going to be the Giants head coach, you know, in infinity for, you know, the rest of times. So when they eventually move on, I think that's a guy that will obviously be in the mix. He'll be in the mix for a lot of other coaching jobs as well, and we'll go from there. 201-939-4513. Dennis is in upstate New York. Dennis, what's going on?
Hey. Well, I have two questions. My first question is that the Eagles just released Miguel Maisonet. He played for out on the island. I'm drawing a blank here.
Stony Brook. Is he a undrafted free agent?
He was, yes.
What's his name?
And so he's out there floating around loose, and he's a local talent, somebody that people around here, you know, watched for some time, and he's a good player.
What's his name, you said?
It's Miguel Maisonet.
Oh, okay.
You're not familiar with him.
I am not that familiar with him, no.
Okay. It's just that he had gotten picked up by the Eagles, and they just dropped him. He never even got on the field.
Wow.
And
you wonder sometimes with guys like that if it's a physical thing where the, you know, if you're a young guy, you're undrafted and you can't, you know, compete physically in the OTAs, and you know you pull a hamstring and you twist an ankle, they need bodies. And if you're a young guy and you're undrafted and you can't play because you're hurt, sometimes they just let you go.
Yeah. I don't think that was the case. I don't know. I mean, I haven't read that much about it, but
right.
I know that there was some interest in the fellow, and actually he wasn't undrafted. I think he was a pick. I think he was a late-round pick.
Oh, was he? Okay. Check it.
The second thing I wanted to talk about is actually old history, but last year about this time I was getting real excited about where the Giants were going to end up because they had won the championship, and also because they were making moves that really appeared good to me. And then, you know, they end up with a 9-7 season. And Chris Canty, now that he's in another team, he says something along the lines of, you know, our hearts really weren't in it. We just weren't that competitive, you know, going into the season. And I don't know, of course, he didn't play until, what, the eighth game or something,
mm-hmm.
but... did you see that at all? I mean, did you feel that they just didn't have the the heart for another championship run?
I think sometimes when a team plays poorly, it looks like the heart's not there. It looks like the effort's not there. When in reality, it's just that the execution is so poor. And I think the Giants just played very, very poorly at times. They didn't do the fundamentals. They didn't tackle well. Eli Manning, quite frankly, made some bad decisions and didn't play particularly well. The pass rush stopped getting after the quarterback. And when guys don't make plays, it might look like they're not trying when it usually isn't the case. And I don't think they lacked heart. I don't think they gave up. Frankly, I just don't think they were good enough. I don't think they were good enough to make enough big plays to win games. And frankly, they probably weren't healthy enough either. If a couple guys don't get hurt like Akeem Nicks, we might be having a completely different conversation right now.
Right.
Oh, and just a heads up, I looked it up on Masonette. It was actually pretty surprising. He received almost a $200,000 signing bonus as an undrafted free agent, a running back. He couldn't participate in OTAs, actually, because Stony Brook has one of those later graduation dates. So yeah. He was there at rookie minicamp, couldn't do anything. And apparently the front office liked him, but Chip Kelly, according to ESPN at least, and Rich Cimini on ESPNNewYork.com, says that Chip Kelly didn't think he was a fit in his system. So that's one of the reasons they let him go. But it was a big surprise down there that they let him walk. And considering he was such a high-priced and sought-after undrafted free agent, I would not be surprised if they end up if another team ends up swooping in and picking him up.
Sure. I'm thinking that Scott may be the odd man out this coming year. I didn't see him have a lot of opportunity, and I didn't see him really perform that well. And he should be given competition, I think.
Well, and Darrell Scott has to hold on to the football. That's first and foremost. If you can find one, there are really two reasons why Darrell Scott hasn't played. One, he's never healthy. He's always hurt. That's one, which will put you in, you know, Tom Coughlin's doghouse in a second. And the second one is that he fumbles. And if you fumble and you get hurt, guess what? You're never going to play. So unless Darrell Scott can fix those two things and really make some plays in the preseason, you're right. He's probably going to be the odd man out.
Yeah. All right. I've taken enough of your time. Thanks.
Nah, Dennis, no problem. Thanks for calling, pal.
Okay.
You have a good one.
Thanks. Bye.
Final call of the show at 201-939-4513 is Dave in Rochester, New York. Dave, good morning. Long time no speak. What's up, pal?
Hey, buddy, good. How are you? How's our man Dottino? You guys off for bagels or anything today?
Paulie Dottino will be hosting solo tomorrow morning, Dave. I'm happy you brought that up. I can do a little tease.
Oh, man, you're going to take a little break tomorrow? You're going to go for coffees or what?
No, we actually, I am being sent on assignment. Sean O'Hara is having one of his CF, Cystic Fibrosis, and Sean O'Hara Foundation golf outings. We'll be there covering that, so I will not be in the building. But Paul Dottino will be here for OTAs, and he'll have all the coverage on Giants.com all day tomorrow morning.
Very good, brother. Well, we'll miss you. My comment is that your list there of potential players that maybe need to improve, I think Herzlick is one of those guys that maybe should be put on the list.
That's fair.
Is it third or fourth year? His third year with the Giants. Basically, we haven't heard anything. Is he in a doghouse? What is his potential? What's keeping him from going from the next level? Seems like a big guy, a good heart. What do you think it is? Are you just not learning the playbook?
I think, from what I understand, mentally he's pretty good. I think Herzlick's biggest problem is that his inability to cover. I think he's fairly decent against the run, but he really struggles in coverage, going side to side, changing direction against some of the faster tight ends, you know, playing zone, things like that that requires, you know, more athleticism maybe. And Herzlick's more of a downhill run-stopping middle linebacker. But you're right, I think it's fair to put him on the list, Dave. I think this is the year where he has to challenge, and I think he'll be in the mix with Rivers and with Aaron Curry at that Sam spot with Dan Connor in the middle. I think that's a position he can play, and it might hide some of his deficiencies on that end as well. So I think Herzlick will have an opportunity to compete for that spot this offseason.
I see. Interesting how we haven't drafted a linebacker first round since the 80s, but we have Rivers and Curry, which are both first rounders, if I believe correctly.
Well, and theoretically, you know, Kiwanuka was drafted as a defensive end, but he did play linebacker and was picked in the first round. So take that for what you will. And Connor was a third round pick.
I see. All right, Johnny. Well, thanks. Have fun tomorrow. I'll talk to you later.
Dave, anytime, man. Thanks for calling and enjoy Paulie Dottino. Give him a call. Say hello for me. He'll be here. He'll be excited. Breaking down the OTA, seeing what's going on. Fired up. Everybody, great job on the phones this morning. Excellent work. Good job on Twitter. Didn't even check your tweets. I guess I should do that before we say goodbye here. Let's see. Has anybody chimed in at Giants Chat? Let's give a quick look here. We have Jeff G-Man. Also look at all the 1,000-yard rushers under Tom Coughlin. Barber, Jacobs, Ward, Bradshaw. Almost one every year he was head coach. And he's worried a little bit about the Giants blocking at tight end. He really wants to shore up that Giants running game, which I get. At JCS02008, is there a significant competition for the third wide receiver spot, or is that Randall's job to lose? I would think it's Ruben Randall's job to lose. Are they going to hand it to him? No. But, you know, Lewis Murphy will have to show that his hands are no longer stone. That's not nice. I've never actually seen him. You know, I've seen him in games, obviously, but apparently he has some problem catching the ball. He has to fix that. Then you have Gerald Jernigan, a third-round pick, but he's more of a slot guy. Him and Randall, it's funny. Jernigan and Randall, wide receivers, but they honestly almost play different positions, even though they're in the same position group. So those guys are almost separate. If Cruz is here, I just don't think there's room for Randall. He's an inside receiver. That's where Cruz is going to play, in 3 and 4 wide receiver spots. Brandon Diggs, Giants will go 11-5. Favorable schedule. Not that favorable, Brandon. Be careful. Schedule is not that easy. Younger and deeper, better built to stop the run this year. All right, I like that. Let's see. That's all we got. Appreciate it. Good job on the phones, everybody. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time right here on Giants.com. Have a good one. Tino, tomorrow morning, 10 a.m., OTAs, all the coverage on Giants.com. Make sure you check it out.